The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yo, welcome into the House of L podcast. I am Lawrence Holmes. Thank you so much for hanging out and listening to the episode. I was jarred into thinking about this anniversary of mine that's coming up by a highlight of another anniversary. A much more famous anniversary than my time at the Score, but my time at the Score started right after the Kerry Wood 20 strikeout game. 2 days later, I was hired and started, and my first job at the Score, because I was hired to be, you know, like a weekend producer and someone who would come in and do audio work. It was part-time. And so my first job was to help archive the Kerry Wood 20 strikeout game, which is crazy to me. Like thinking about it, like thinking about where my career started, where it is right now, thinking about how it'll end, like all of that stuff. But it started with me putting highlights on reel to reels and on digital audio tapes, DATs. Wanted to make sure I whiteboarded that for people who didn't maybe necessarily know what a DAT is. But that's how my career at the Score started. It's weird to think that was 26 years ago. It's weird to be entering year 27. Like crazy. When I was working at, so, all right, for those of you who don't know the story, I'll try to be brief. There is a lot of years to work through here, obviously, but after I left college, I had a square job or an office job for a little while working at a title insurance company. And the supervisor, like I got the job through DePaul, and the supervisor there did not like me. At least my supervisor. I shouldn't say the supervisor, because his supervisor did like me. And when there was beef between me and my supervisor, his supervisor stepped in and was like, "You're not doing your job because you're supposed to be trying to teach him the business." He wasn't going to teach me the business. So it was whatever. But while I was doing that, I was working at Channel 9. The year before at Channel 9, I had an internship. The internship turned into still like my greatest part-time job ever. Like I was paid really well. I'm pretty sure, and I hope that this is not like doesn't cause any problems for anyone now, I'm pretty sure I made $15 an hour. And that was $15 an hour in 1997. Man, my roommate, shout out to my guy, Matt Lazarato. It's my dude. We had an apartment. We had left DePaul and we graduated and we had an apartment on Addison right off of Walcott. It's wild too, because I'm pretty sure that that was like where Jay Williams like threw his bike into the light pole, was like right around the corner from us. And I remember going to see the wreckage after that. This was before like cell phone cameras and whatnot. But we had this great apartment. Now, it was a garden apartment, so it was the basement. But it was huge. There was this great family, this great Haitian family. And we lived in their basement, and it was a three-bedroom basement. It was a huge house. I don't even know. I should go by there. I haven't gone by there in a while. But it worked out great because it was, what, 5 blocks from Channel 9 and about 2 miles, 3 miles from the Score. Because back then, the Score was on Belmont and Cicero. It's maybe 4 miles. And it was great. I had my little Honda Civic, and go there and work and do odd shifts, like whatever shifts that they needed, I would do. And the Score was like the Wild West back then. And that building that we were in on Belmont, it was a great learning experience because the quarters were so tight that we were all getting on each other's nerves all the time. At least that's the way that I remember it. And I remember being embraced by people there because what I had already done as a producer. See, a lot of people think that I started at the Score as an intern, and that's not true. I was an intern 3 years prior to that at WMAQ, which back then was 670 AM. Another strange coincidence. So I interned for Jeff Joniak and Lou Kanellis. And I wasn't the best intern. I mean, I had a lot of stuff that was going on at the time, including playing baseball, thinking maybe at some point I might have a pro career, not like the majors, but playing in the minors. I was chasing that. There's all sorts of stuff. So I wasn't the best intern. But I had so much experience from being in high school doing stuff at WHFH 88.5 Flossmoor. From high school that I was ahead of a lot of people. I got hired at MAQ as a producer midway through my internship because the producer of the show that we worked on, it was a show called The Sports Huddle. WMAQ was a news radio station, but at night and on the weekends, they had White Sox games, so there was a sports element to it, and there was this show that would come on at night. And I worked on it. It's where I met Steve Olkin, who is still one of my favorite people that I've ever worked on a show with. Just a sharp man who understood how to help at the time, a 19-year-old intern figure out how to be a professional. Big fan of his to this day. So yeah, I wasn't an intern. Strangely enough, the guy who was an intern at the Score was Dan Zampillo. He and I would end up being partners on a show called Me and Z, which I still contend had Z and I really like stuck together. If we'd been in sync in our goals, we would have been a huge talk show. But he had other goals, and apparently so did I. So it didn't work. But he still, Z is a huge reason why House of L exists, though. I met with him 6 years ago, and him and Jason Goff, and I told them that I was planning on doing a podcast, and I asked their advice, and they were nice enough to give me their advice. But Z and I were hired on the same day. He was, you know, the people at the Score knew him a lot better than they knew me because he had interned there. So he had seniority. So basically whenever he got promoted, I got promoted. So when he got a full-time job, I got the higher profile part-time jobs. And, you know, Spiegel was there at the time when I got hired. Matt Fishman, Jonathan Hood, they were all producers at The Score back then. And it was the Heavy Fuel Crew show with Dan and Terry in the afternoon. There was North and Jiggets, and you're getting an opportunity. Like, you see Dan Jiggets on TV, and now you get an opportunity to work with him. Norm Van Leer and Doug Buffone were walking around that place. And, you know, my father's favorite player was Doug Buffone. And so he was like, what? Like, what do you mean you're working with Doug Buffone? The crazy part, you know, I'll tell this story to anybody who will listen, including you. When I was in high school, so go back 6 years. When I was in high school, The Score started. And our football coach at HF, John Wren, who is another person who is so instrumental in the fact that I am here in front of a microphone, it's crazy. I got hurt playing ball, and I was serial casted for, God, it must have been like 4 months. I smashed my ankle, and they did what's called a triple arthrodesis surgery, so three bones fused into one. And that put me on the shelf, but HF had this thing called adaptive PE. Like, whatever you could do, you did. And so, you know, I would lift weights, like do upper body stuff, sitting down, obviously. When I could, Coach Wren and I would play ping pong. And he said to me, he's like, you know, they got this all. I used to do a high school sports show. Like, I did a show called Sports Mania at HF with Aaron Strom. And it was fun. And it was a lot of power. People listened to that show. Like, I've learned a big lesson about the responsibility of the airwaves doing that show. So anyway, Coach Wren was like, hey, there's an all sports station that's on the air. Like, this is, and so when we were in class, he would turn The Score on, like in 1992 and 1993. So I am one of those kids that, I mean, I guess technically it's only 2 years, but I grew up listening to The Score and being intrigued by the idea that there could be a genre of sports talk. And it didn't seem crazy to me, because I was already in high school doing a sports radio show on a 1500 watt radio station that had, you know, a listening radius of what, 15 miles or whatever it was. So getting a chance to work there was a huge deal. And I went and saw Coach Wren probably like 10 years ago. He was working at Arizona State at the time. And I just thanked them because he helped me understand that even if my path wasn't being a coach, he also helped me get a job working as a coach at Washington High School over on the east side. And I did that for a couple years. But he let me know that I didn't have to, I could do a lot of different things in sports. And that if I wanted to, I could end up being on The Score. And it's wild to think that that was over 30 years ago. And here I am, like, my only full-time job as an adult has been working at The Score. I guess technically I had a full-time job at Stadium, technically, because I was working there 5 days a week. But The Score has been my only, like, full-time job as an adult. It's wild. It's really, really wild. I don't want to spend too much time just reminiscing, even though obviously this is an anniversary pod. There is some stuff I want to tell you about, like, my experience there. So stick around and I'll walk you through some of it. That's next.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ron Gleason was the person who hired me at The Score. I think Ron Gleason was a great program director. And I've worked for another, what I think is a really great program director in Mitch Rosen. And I've had some really good bosses in TV too. Ron was ahead of his time, even though he was like an old school radio dude. He just retired last year. He was the guy that was in charge. You'd hear him on the Bears broadcast if you didn't know, like he'd do the halftime report and whatnot. But he was a boss over at BBM, and you know, the executive producer, I guess, technically was his title of Bears football. Shout out to my guy, Joe Bartosh, too, who did a great job on those broadcasts. And back then, because the genre was still really young and finding talent is interesting, Chicago's a very provincial place. So it's hard to break in as someone who's from out of town. It's a hard thing. There needs to be some sort of connection. Like if you're someone who grew up here and then came back, like Parkins, for example. You know, he's from it, so he's got like a base to draw from, like as a fan. But it's really hard to be an out-of-towner and come in and be a success. There's just so much to learn. So that gave those of us who were available that were in town opportunities, because back then, people for the most part weren't doing remote broadcasts. So when The Score was on 1160, so we went from 820, and the 820 signal was a daytime signal, sun up to sundown. So in the spring and summer and early fall, we were on until, you know, in the show that Murph show, which was on at 6 o'clock in the summer, it would go till 837, whatever sundown was. And then we go off the air. Once we got the 1160 signal, it was a 24-hour signal, but it would go from 50,000 watts to 5,000 watts at night. So Murph, Tommy Williams, their show would be available to less people because our antenna was pointed in a direction where it needed to power down at night because the AM waves carry better at night, which is why you could sometimes hear The Score over the air, like in your car, if you're in Southern Illinois at night. Like a lot of people heard me when I was the nighttime host over the air in places where they shouldn't have been. I remember I was covering a Conference USA tournament. Yeah, that's how old I am. DePaul was playing in a Conference USA tournament. I went down to cover it because I think they were in the Conference USA semifinal or final. And I was able, the tournament was in Memphis. So after I covered the game and I was looking for something to do, I went to Tunica, Mississippi, and went to the riverboats. And I was able to hear Murph's show on the drive from Memphis to Tunica, which is about like 25 miles. But it's crazy that I was able to hear the show. Anyway, then eventually we moved over to 670 as a signal, and we've been there for a really long time, and it's great that we were there. I learned a lot. I mean, I've continued to learn a lot from the people that I encountered. So getting the opportunity to be on air on the weekends, like me and Z had a show. I originally started out producing the WrestleManiac show with Jonathan and then became his co-host. Like I was kind of co-hosting from the producer's chair. And then I think I moved into the room with Jonathan when Jason came on board as a 19-year-old producer, which is crazy. Like the three of us running the radio station at night is really wild. Back then, back in 99, 2000, like having that be a thing. I think my career has changed dramatically three times at the Score. And if you'll indulge me, I'll tell you those three times. Number one was 2003. I had worked in the sales department, which was illuminating, and I think important for anyone who wants to even be on the programming side to work in sales so you know how things work. And finding that out was fascinating. So I did that, and I was thinking about doing something else in 2003. I was on the air part-time. So I would work sales 5 days a week, and then I would host shows on the weekend. And the sales thing didn't serve me the way that I thought. Like, I made a nice piece of change, and it was nice to have like a little bit of a nest egg at that point. I was, what, 26, 27? So it was nice to make some real money, because my first full-time producing job, which I'll get to in a second. My first full-time producing job was $23,500. That's what I was making. So getting that bump up, and I think my first year in sales, I made like 60 grand. And so that felt like I was a millionaire. But it wasn't what I wanted to do. Like, I didn't want a cold call, and I was getting ready to leave, and I don't even know what I was going to do next. And I remember I had a conversation with Dave Baum, the chat champ, and I told him that I was getting ready to leave, and he told me that it would be a mistake if I left. And I took that to heart. So I was offered, it turns out that the time that I was done with sales, there was an opening to be the executive producer of the Murph and Fred show. So I was offered it. I didn't make a lot of money doing that. And I did that for a couple of years until 2003. And in 2003, I was offered a reporter's job. It was like general reporting. And I think it was because I think that was when Julie got promoted. I think Julie had been promoted to hosting at night, and so someone needed to report. So I was one of those people, and I was given an opportunity in my first job. I was supposed to go out and get guests on the air, because that's what reporters did back then, along with getting the news. They also booked guests, and that was the Marlins. I got promoted the week of the Cubs Marlins series. So my first big get was Jack McKeon, the manager of the Marlins. I got him on the Score. He was like the nicest guy. the Marlins PR was not very helpful, and I kind of talked my way around it with Trader Jack. Like, he was in the dugout, and he was minding his business, and he was smoking a cigar. And he said, "Is this, you know, is the smoke bothering you?" And I was like, "No, not at all." And so I started talking to him about cigars because I liked cigars a little bit. I like knowing about cigars more than I did smoking them. And then I told him, I said, "Hey, you know, I work for the Score. We'd love to get you on for a few minutes, like after you're finished with your cigar." And he laughed. And he goes, "Dial him up, kid. Dial him up. We'll do it right now." So I call the afternoon show and I'm like, "Dude, Jack McKeon is ready to go right now." Put him on the cell phone and he was great. He was so funny. And it was a big win for me. It's like one of the first things that I ever did working as a reporter. And then after that, I went to the Bears beat and that changed my life. Like it didn't just change my career. It changed my life. I never really traveled. The most traveling that I had done in college was I went to Antoine Randle-El is my like third cousin. So I went to go see him play. So I went down to Bloomington, and my senior year, I had this crazy like weekend where I saw a Cubs game. It's like a Cubs game in Milwaukee, a Sox game on the South Side. And then I took the train to St. Louis and went to a Cardinals game. That's about the most traveling I did. Like when we were kids, we'd get in the car and we'd go to DC or Florida or Atlanta, but I had never really been anywhere. I think I had been on one flight to Kansas City, but that was it. So I got to see the world. I got to travel. I got to see, it's probably more accurate to say I got to see the country, but I did get a chance to go out of the country because of what I did working, covering the Bears. And that was like super cool. And it was great because I had support. You know, I didn't really hold my tongue back then as a producer. Like people who I produced for knew that, you know, I didn't mess around as a producer. And, you know, Dan was one of those people. I used to produce his show that he would have when he was doing the nighttime show. I'd occasionally do that. And then he had a weekend show and I would produce that. And that's where he wouldn't bring me breakfast, but he would bring the executive producer of that show, Larry Libman, breakfast. Now he corrected that once I became executive producer, but I was like, "Dan, you should just bring, it's a dollar. Like, get me a sausage biscuit. It's a dollar." Anyway, but he was really supportive. He and Terry were really supportive of what it was, and they built this space for me. We used to have the Bears Hit, and we always joke Bears Hit, two words, because back in the day, we would write out the guest and what the guest was on talking about. So if I'm on, it says Bears Hit. If Schuster's on, it's a Bulls Hit. If Jesse is on, it's a Cubs Hit. But producers would write so fast, it would look like Cubs shit, bullshit, bear shit. So that's what we say, Bears Hit, two words. And they said, 5 o'clock, it's your show. Like, you tell us what's important from Halas Hall. And that was huge. It's still how a lot of people know me, strangely enough. The second thing that I think is significant is a failure. And I talk about this a lot. Some people tell me that I'm not the one who failed. I don't see it that way. Like, to me, the show fails. So, you know, I felt like a failure. And that was when I was given the opportunity to host Middays. It was after North left the station. This was at 2009. And I was given the opportunity to work with Dan Hampton. And Hampton Holmes, like, it didn't last very long. I think we got 6 months. we started, like, I think we started in April. And I'm like, why are we doing that? That doesn't seem, but whatever. It was an opportunity and it was a failure. And it was hard. Like, it was devastating. The cool thing was, is that at the time, even though the show failed, like, Mitch didn't want me to leave. He wasn't like, you're fired. He's like, we're just, this show isn't working. So he said, how do you feel about doing the nighttime show? And I had kind of done the nighttime show while reporting. He's like, just come do the nighttime show every night. You know, leading into White Sox, because we had the White Sox and Blackhawks and stuff. Your show. And then when there's no games on, you go till 10 o'clock. Fine. And that's where I like found myself as a host, is doing that show. And the producers that I had on that show, like, it's huge to me. Like, those guys and girl, they, I think they know, but I, anytime that I bring it up, I try to let them know, like, how much their contribution meant to me. Like, the nighttime show is a living, breathing element. I still think it's so fun working with Joe Ostrowski, who, I mean, Joe played a big role in, like, saving my career. And I joke with him all the time that we were the outcast. Like, he had been producing Mully and Hanley, and they had, you know, gone in another direction from a producer standpoint. And I had had this show that failed. And we were put together, and we hadn't really worked with each other. And I think we both understood, like, all right, let's go put together the show that we want to put together. And so knowing that I had a producer who had my back was huge. And then having Chris Tannehill be a part of that show, and Herb Lawrence being a part of that show, and Melissa Rakaitis being a part of that show, and all the other, like, part-time producers who jumped in too, like Jay Zawoski before he was a full-time showrunner. Adam Hoag was one of the people who used to produce that show. Like, honestly, the nighttime show, if you look at that nighttime show, and I'm talking host, producer, update people. Wayne Randazzo was my update guy. Chris Ranji was my update guy. Do you understand? Like, this is legit, man. Like, we had some real people on that show. And being able to put some stuff together and figure myself out as a host was huge. It was huge. I think I said three things. I think it's four. And I'll try and wrap this up because I know I've already talked too long. But I have so many fond memories of the nighttime show. Like, that's where, you know, I brought Layla in because I had been doing TV stuff. And I was like, you should do radio. She was like, all right. Because she had that background from The Ticket in Dallas. And we were like, why don't you come and hang out, like, whenever you want? She was like, let's do it once a month and let's call it The Monthly Visitor. Her choice, not mine. And it was hysterical. The stuff that we would do, Ask Herb. What an incredible segment that was. And then the interviews, Joe used to tell me all the time, because I was worried about the clock. And he would say, if an interview's good, just keep going. And that helped me to kind of develop my style as an interviewer. That we never felt rushed. And we felt like, because it was nighttime and maybe the bosses weren't listening, we could do more stuff and experiment. And you start finding really good guests that you're putting on the air. And it ends up being great. So that's number two. Number three is the promotion to middays. My solo show, Middays, and what was that, 2017? and specifically Joe Madden. Tony Gill and Joe Madden. Joe Madden played, I can never thank him enough for what he did for the show and for the station. Y'all can't never say nothing bad about Joe Madden to me. I'll kick your ass. when I found out that, you know, the score had the Cubs and I was going to be hosting the manager show. Like, I was going to have Joe Madden on once a week. Man, y'all couldn't tell me nothing. And then Tony made the show better by saying, we've got Joe here. Like, Joe cares more about other stuff than just baseball. And he was like, let's ask Joe crazy questions. So the first thing we did was the chocolate chip versus oatmeal chip, oatmeal cookies and oatmeal raisin cookies. And Tony for sure thought that Joe was going to be the oatmeal raisin guy. And Joe got on the air and tore Tony apart. Like, chocolate chip, man, that's where it's at. So I was able to build like a bond and a friendship with Joe. And that's really rare because he was the man. Like, after winning the World Series, Joe Madden was the guy. And so we like hung out, you know, like it was cool to be able to pick his brain about stuff. And he was very kind. And he was just as cool as you could be, as cool as you imagine him to be. He was. And then there was the Nick Castellanos interview. And both of those, like Joe Madden overall, but Castellanos, that interview was like one of those things that like puts you on the radar, like goes viral. And it's one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done. And it's because of Castellanos, like not because of me, but the way that we put that together and set it up to get a reaction. And then we got a great reaction. You can go look. It's still up like on YouTube and stuff. It's been seen like 500,000 times. Him crying about like how great it was to be a Cub and to be appreciated by Joe Madden. Favorite. And then the consolidation of the two shows where we put together my show and the Bernstein and Rahimi show. And obviously like Layla got the job at Channel 5. So she's our partner on Wednesday, but that's a big deal too. And it was the first time since the Hampton Holmes thing that I had a radio partner. So navigating all of that is a challenge when you're used to having space to do whatever you want to do. Not that Dan's like, you can't do anything because I'm Dan Burton. No, he's open to a lot of ideas. It's just different when you're sharing the space, and I'm sharing the space with two people who are forces. But all four of those things, I think, have been really instrumental to looking up and blinking and being like, holy shit, like I've been here for 26 years. So my contract's up next June. And I've already started thinking about like what happens next. And I don't know. And it's the first time in a long time that I don't, like, I always have a plan, you know, but the industry has been so fickle, especially over the last 5 years. I don't know how far you can plan out anymore, but I do know that I'm under contract through next June. But I start thinking about like getting closer and closer. I'll be 49 next month, thinking about getting closer and closer to my 50th birthday. And not that it should be a demarcation line, but I think a lot about like, what do I want to do while I can still kind of get out here and hustle and do stuff. but it's been great. There have been hard times. Like, there have been, I've had my dusty roads moments. There have been people who have left that I wish would have never left. There are avenues that I wish could have really been explored. There was a show that Zach and Maddie and I were kind of piloting, and it didn't work out. If you go back in, you know, a couple years ago, I did an episode with Matt Abaticola. If you scroll through, you can, I don't want to go back into all of that, but you can hear, we talked about it, you know, and it was a problem, like, in our interpersonal relationship for a long time. And we have since squashed it. I love Maddie. And it's nice to be able to just kind of, because we work together on the Murph and Fred show. So it's nice to be in a place where he and I are like, good, you know, like we were. And we worked through it and we talked it out. But I felt like that's another one of those shows that, man, it had a chance. Like, Mitch saw something and he was right. But I'm happy that Zach is kind of living in this space where he's on short list now to be full-time play-by-play. And the job that he does on Cubs pre and post and doing the fifth inning and sitting in for Pat, he's another one of those people. I joke all the time. If the score had a locker room, my locker would be next to Zach's. Like, if we had stalls like a baseball team, my locker would be next to his. That dude's hilarious. And he gets me. We traveled a lot doing DePaul games. There's another great thing about me working at the score is being able to do play-by-play for my alma mater and call games and go to the Big East tournament and, you know, spend every year knowing that in March I was going to New York and I was going to be at Madison Square Garden. I've shot hoops at Madison Square Garden because usually DePaul was the early game, so there's no one there. And the coaches, whether it was Jerry Wainwright or Oliver Purnell or Tracy Dildy, they like encouraged. It's like, this is the garden. You got to shoot buckets when you're here. I've done that. I've played basketball at Madison Square Garden. It's dope. And now I've played it at the United Center too, which is even doper, but It's been great. And it's been fun. I mean, that place means a lot to me for a lot of reasons. Like, I met Mel there, you know, like, and that changed my life. But I'm really happy with the connections that I've made with people being on the air and hearing people say that we got people to where they were going. You know, on the nighttime show, hearing people say, oh, I'm a trucker, man. I listen to you every night. Or I pick the kids up from school or from games or practices, and we listen to you, or we listened to you. That means a lot. Being able to capture your audience's attention is a big deal. Radio is an intimate medium. You spend a lot of time in people's heads. You're their friend. In some cases, Jason jokes about this and he's right. Like, for a lot of people, we were their first black friends. And that's good because they can see in Jason, they can be like, oh, you know, Jason's cool as whatever. And Lawrence is kind of geeky. And you can find elements of things that you can connect with both of us and be like, oh, black people are a kaleidoscope. And maybe you get some perspective, and maybe we share some perspective. I'm big into the cultural exchange of working on a radio show too. I think that that's fun. But knowing that that's been a big part of my life is, it's humbling. In my office, I have a collage of family photos that I'm staring at as I'm doing the podcast. And there's a picture of my grandparents. My grandmother on my mother's side, she passed away in 99. So it was about a year into my journey. She used to read the sports page to me. She's a big Bulls fan. I fell in love with DePaul because when I would go over to her house, you know, if my parents would drop me off over there, and I would watch DePaul game, I would sit on the floor and turn on Channel 9 and watch those really great DePaul teams of the early 80s. I mean, I can't tell you that I remember 79. I was four, but. And I wonder what she would think about all of this. Like me doing this. Like, I wonder what she would think, like seeing me on television doing sports. And she was so excited when the Bulls won. When Jordan came back, she loved Michael Jordan. I got to interview Michael Jordan. Like, so there's a lot. There's more I could go on, but I've already taken up enough of your time. They say that the sweet spot for a podcast is like 42 minutes, and I know that I went over. But I appreciate you being a part of the journey, and then that journey leading to House of L, like that's a big deal too. So thanks for everything that you've done for me. Even if you don't know what you've done for me, I can tell you that, and I spoke about this a little bit on a couple episodes back when I was talking about my issues with anxiety. I'm never more comfortable than when I'm in a radio studio. When I get the opportunity to talk to and sometimes perform for you. So thanks for your support throughout the years, whether that support is this podcast, or you listening to The Score, or maybe you just jump in and out of The Score now. I'm okay with that too. We all grow and we need different things from stimuli. But thanks for making my life and my career really great. Oh, also, like this beat that you hear is my nephew that did this, which is why I'll always be the theme song. And I appreciate him, and I appreciate, you know, my parents pushing me into this and my brother supporting me no matter what. And thanks for what's been a great 26 years. You got me for at least another year and a month. Let's make it happen. Talk to you next time. Peace.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.